gravity, we all fall down. Gravity, we all fall down. Gravity, we all fall down. Gravity, we all fall down.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2018. Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels, with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, when the Empire uses a powerful new weapon to capture Ezra and Commander Sato, Rex and Kanan must put their differences aside to save their friends. There will be... someone calls Rex fat. Ezra does Ezra things, and Rex and Kanan finally bury the past in this buddy team-up episode. We're talking about Stealth Strike this week. I need a Kanan and Rex buddy cop show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I've
seen
fan art of it. Like, people have done, like, some fan art of, like, them as, like, two cops. Like, he's, like, the old gruff guy, and Kanan's the young hotshot. And, like, those, not only are those fanfics really great, that fan art is really great, too. So, oh, so good. How you doing, Chris?
Good.
I only just talked to you yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, I got a lot done. I rode my bike to the post office and mailed off a piece of a secret parcel for a top secret podcasting project.
This sounds really cool, by the way.
Hope is now in on it. She wasn't in on it last week when I mentioned it, but now she's in on it.
It's a really cool idea.
You guys don't get to know.
I'm very excited for you guys.
Got on the roof of my garage and found out on the back there's big holes in the back of the garage that have to be fixed. So that was, and I clipped a lot of branches today. It's a full day. Then I clipped my fingernails.
No, I didn't.
I'm just stealing your glory for when you were talking about what you did today.
Oh, well, yeah, I was clipping my fingernails as we were shooting the
as we speak.
But yeah, I had a pretty good day. I just worked on this podcast outline today. And I was procrastinating real, real bad. So, Dario, I just looked up at the candy box and I realized you put the wrong city on it. I do not live in Lawrence, Georgia. There is no Lawrence, Georgia to my knowledge. So, anyway. Sorry, tangent. I just happened to look up and be like, I don't live there.
How did that candy get to you then?
I have no magic. The magic of Dario, I guess. Anyway, Dario messaged me. I'll send you my address. But yeah, I pretty much procrastinated all day working on this. I didn't finish it till like 4, and usually I'm done by like 2. And then tonight, after we're done, I'm working on a writing contest that's due Friday, and Megan edited it for me, and so I'm going to be looking over her editing notes for myself and then go to bed. And I played with my cats today. And I have a really cute video of Zeb playing today. So my dear Zeb, Zebulu, my dear Zeb Aurelius. Though everybody calls him Zebulon. And in the back of my mind, I'm like, his name is Gera Zeb Aurelius.
He looks, now the pictures you're showing, he looks very much, his coloring is very much like my beloved Doctor Strange cat, except he's got the long hair. Going, you know, I don't know if he's a long hair cat, but he's got that sort of long hair around his belly, and
he's kind of like a medium hair cat. He's not a super long hair cat.
He's definitely got the tuxedo cat coloration. So
the cutest thing is because he's a little bit white on his lip, and then the little white like trails down his chin and down to his neck.
That's what I'm saying.
His white spot there, so it looks. So it looks like a little bit of milk like dribbled out of his mouth and down his chin.
That was the same with Doctor Strange. They're very similar looking cats. Does he like to climb? Is he a shoulder cat? Does he get up on your shoulders?
No, he's actually a little bit more of a floor cat. Like, he'll lay in the floor like a dog. Like he likes to just lay in the floor near us. Like, I was making lunch this morning, or making lunch this afternoon, and he was just, like, laying near my feet. And then when I got up and went to the table, he got up and followed me and then just, like, laid down beside. But he definitely doesn't like to be held, and he doesn't like to be, like... He likes his perch. He doesn't like any other perches. He doesn't like to be too up high. But he likes his perch. His perch is fine. Because it's his.
Yeah.
So he's more of a floor cat. He's still learning that, like, hands and feet are not toys. Because last night he sat on my feet. Because he likes to burrow. And so I had a blanket over my lap last night. And he, like, burrowed between the blanket and my feet. And I was like, this is really cute. Oh, fuck. He's going to attack my feet. And sure enough, when I went to get up, he was just like, mine! And I was like, ow, fuck, no, Zeb. But, yeah, he's a cutie. When he's playing, he gets that wild-eyed look that Zeb and Rebels gets when he's fighting. It's really funny. Megan pointed it out to me, like, at first, because she was like, Zeb's a really fitting name. He gets that wild-eyed Lasat look. He's a wild-eyed Lasat cat. So, I can't wait for us to do honorable ones.
It's coming.
You know, we're booking through this season. Like, I had to look it up, and this is like 9 episodes in.
This one is, I think this is technically the
seventh. Where's the time go?
What's that? I think this is technically the 7th episode.
No, I looked it up. I had to, because, I needed to make a point for one of my notes, so I was like, how many episodes are we in season 2? Because they don't count the first two. And it was it was like, Stealth Strike is the 9th episode of season 2. And I was just like, so technically this is the 11th episode if you include the movie. Because the movie's 2 episodes, technically. So I was just like, holy fuck. That and the Rebels Recon, they were like, when we come back from the Christmas break for new episodes in January... And I was like, oh, man, this is the halfway point episode. Actually, no, next week is the halfway point episode, because that was the Rebels Recon for next week that I was looking at.
Oh, okay.
Well, you ready to get into Self-Strike?
I'm ready.
What did you think of it?
I really like this episode.
It's so much fun.
I'm going to have fun contrasting this with the last, like, couple episodes.
Yeah, because
there's comparisons, not story-wise, but just in the kind of episode it is.
Because we were talking last week about the formulas of these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how, like, these are transition episodes, like, with, like, Ezra and Hondo, and then Hera had hers, and, like, now we're getting, like, we had Sabine's, and now it's Kanan's. And, yeah, this is the best of all of them.
This one's a lot more fun than the last couple. It's still a just sort of little formula adventure, but, boy, this one's running on all gears. We're especially, like, the last episode, I think, or, you know, as we recorded yesterday's episode, so it's still fresh in our brains.
Yeah.
But, yeah, this one gets... just about everything right that the other... Not that the other ones got a lot wrong. Actually, the last one only really got, like one thing wasn't really working for it. But, boy, everything's working in this one.
Yeah, I think half of my notes is me just writing little things of, like, this is really funny, this is really great, this mm-hmm. is hilarious. Like, that's, like, half of my notes.
Mm-hmm.
So, I had so much... I remembered that I really liked this episode, and it was a lot of fun, but my goodness, I forgot how much freaking fun this episode was.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun watching this one.
I laughed just about every 30 seconds, and it was from everybody. It wasn't just, like, Kanan and Rex. Like, Ezra was really funny in this. Chopper was really funny. Commander Sato had a line that just made me just die laughing right at the
end.
All
the Imperials were fun in this one, too.
Yeah, because even Titus, like, Titus is, like, evilly fun.
Is that Colonel Sideburns?
Yeah.
Colonel Sideburns and, what's his name? Callus were both a lot of fun.
Yeah, they're very bitchy at each other. Sadly, Titus only has one more episode, and I think it's the season 3 opening. Because I remember that episode because he actually, spoiler alert for season 3, the next time you see Titus, he's been demoted.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I would have considered going down with that. Well, we'll get into it when we get into Act 3.
But, yeah. All right, let's do this. Ready?
Yep.
Stealth Strike is the 24th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on November 25th, 2015. It was written by Matt Michnovitz and directed by Brad Rau. Some extra information for you. Admiral Brom Titus is voiced by Derek Partridge. He is best known as a British television presenter and a news anchor, but he's also been in a variety of TV shows like Star Trek and starred in the movie Savage Harvest. The concept of the Empire using a ship to disable other vessels' hyperspace capabilities using the Interdictor first appeared in the Star Wars role-playing game, the 1989 supplement Imperial Sourcebook. The ship first appeared in Timothy Zahn's novel Heir to the Empire. It was reintroduced back into current canon in the 2014 novel Tarkin. The design of Brom Titus is very much influenced by local extras hired near the California studios in the 1970s to fill in the background of Imperial scenes in the original trilogy. They gave him light complexions and a more 70s-inspired haircut. This episode marks the series debut of an Imperial weapons technician. This episode marks the series debut of the Imperial weapons technicians, wearing the classic beetle-like helmets associated with the Death Star gunners. These techs are specific to experimental projects. In the Rebels Recon for this episode, Dee Bradley Baker talked about how Rex is okay with being at odds with Kanan, because Rex used to be at times at odds with Anakin. And Rex knows how to roll with the Jedi when things go differently than what he was trained to do. They also talked about the Interdictor in this episode and how in this time period, the Empire is building its arsenal. Of course, it all leads up to the Death Star, but ships throughout the series are like stepping stones closer and closer to that end goal. And finally, they also talked about the concept of Ezra becoming more of a hybrid Jedi. He's getting training from both Kanan and Rex, and the team is affecting Ezra's skills as well. It's influencing his abilities as a Jedi, especially in fighting, letting him be both actively aggressive in the Force, but also getting tactician skills from Rex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He's becoming that perfect hybrid of Clone Wars era training.
Yeah, and like I also think like a lot of his training just from beforehand, like his thief training is like so helpful too. He knows how to play people, so it's a lot of fun.
Know who else is a lot of fun?
I was trying to think of a way to be like tacticians, like, you know, who's also a tactician.
Yoda's very tactile.
You're
tactile, Yoda is.
You're tact-touchy. Tact-touchy. That was a bad one, Yoda. Thank you for laughing at that. You're very kind to me. Thanks.
call me Yoda Biden. hair.
Oh, I thought that's where you were going. I just didn't know. That was just like, am I sure this is where Yoda's going on this one? Yep. That's where we just went. Well, I'm trying to save some of our listener questions, because remember, listeners, we are running short on Yoda questions, so please send them in to us. Also, please send us in Yoda versus Yaddle questions.
Great.
Please. So, this week, your question comes from me, Yoda, and it's a life question. And this is actually very fitting because we opened the show with me talking about my kitty. So I was just talking about Zeb, and Zeb is a younger cat. We're guessing he's about probably less than 2 years old, which is the teenage years for kitties. But we also have two older cats named Carmilla and Spokes, who are about 13 to 15 years old. Even when we play with Zeb and run out all his energy, he still likes to attack our other two old ladies. So, since the Force has the ability to connect with animals, what would you suggest to get all of our animals to stop fighting?
Fighting keeps old cats strong. Strong and peppy, but...
That's true. Carmilla did beat the crap out of him the other day, like, got her claws stuck in his fur and was, like, dragging him.
Have Yoda. Yoda will ride on Zeb's back like young Skywalker. That'd slow him down.
That'd be the cutest thing ever. Now, Yoda, I need to find a plush Yoda and, like, strap it to Zeb's back so he could just ride on him.
Yes.
Actually, he's a big cat. You probably could ride on him. He's a big fucking cat.
Like my ostrich in Clone Wars.
Wasn't it a goat?
Oh, goat, ostrich, Yoda doesn't know.
You had a battle goat in the Clone Wars.
Goats are called ostriches in space. No, you know nothing of this universe and what we call our animals. Or you could just tie tiny rocks to his feet.
No.
Yes.
No,
tiny rocks. Just enough to slow him down.
No, it will hurt his beans. He has precious beans.
Or tiny rocks or one brick.
No. Oh. You know who wouldn't suggest something like that? Ooh. Yeah.
Rah!
She would suggest me loving on my kitty and, like, taking his time and... reintroducing them and taking... Yeah, Yaddo would not tell me to tie a brick to my cat.
Horrible things Yaddo would do to a cat. Horrible things.
You would rather tie a brick to Yaddo and shove her off a bridge, right?
Ooh! Yoda never thought of that, thank you!
Oh my god, did you kill Yaddle during Order 66 before going after Palpatine?
No. Yoda didn't kill. No. No kill. No.
Yoda!
No, never. No. Yoda doesn't kill. No.
Yeah, I think you need to go to your corner.
Yaddle's fine.
Go to your corner and think about what you did, Yoda.
Okay. Yeah, that's really creepy.
Yeah, you sit in your corner and you think about what you did. Too bad I don't have a spray bottle. Spray.
See, I don't see Yoda killing Yaddle as much as having Yaddle, like, stuffed in a box somewhere like the Gimp from from Pulp Fiction.
I've never seen Pulp Fiction.
Oh. Well, everybody else in the world has hope, so they know what the Gimp is.
Well, you ready to get started?
I am.
Let's do this. Act 1. We open with Commander Sato and Ezra on a mission together as they search for a missing patrol. Ezra is pulling a slight teenage attitude, which Sato quickly shuts down, reminding Ezra that this is supposed to be his chance to prove to Sato that he can be useful. This mission patrol is weird, though, that it went missing because there are no other planets or systems in this part of space. Then the of the Force starts playing, and Ezra senses that something is about to happen. And that something does happen, as their ship is very suddenly pulled out of the hyperspace. They're all a bit confused because something like that shouldn't be able to work. And then they see it's the Interdictor, which they have no idea is a ship that can pull them out of hyperspace, but it just did. And Sato gets the very beginning of a distress signal out before all their comms are jammed, and it looks like they're trapped. Back on Garel, the rest of the Ghost crew watch the message and are just as confused as Sato's people were. Space Mom explains that tractor beams can't lock onto a ship in hyperspace, but Sabine explains that it's a gravity well, something that the Empire has been developing since she was in the Academy. She spouts that the Imperial procedures will dictate that the testing area wouldn't be that large. So where they lost Commander Sato is probably where the ship is. And Space Dad is like, "Gear up, Space Family! Let's go save our son!" But Hera stops Kanan and says that he's gonna go alone with Rex, whose military experience with the Empire would be invaluable. And Kanan is like, no, not Rex, no, why, wife, wife, what did I do to you, and or not do to you last night for you to punish me like this? And Hera has a touch of guilt in her voice because she sent Ezra on this mission. And seeing that, Kanan accepts the mission for his space wife. Back with the Empire, Sato and Ezra are being escorted through the hallways. And Ezra is like, I'll get us out of here, Commander. Don't you worry. And Commander Sato is like, yeah, okay there, 15-year-old child. Good luck with that. And they're taken to meet Admiral Braun Titus. And Sato says that they're they're with the corporation, and their ships have been taken illegally. But Titus knows exactly who he is, and he knows that they're rebels. Titus set this whole thing up, knowing that capturing one rebel ship would bring out all the others, and he never dreamed of capturing Sato of all people. Titus reveals that he knows what Ezra, who gave his Jabba name, is not actually Jabba the Hutt, because Alexander Kallus had already informed him. Titus isn't here to play and sends them to the brig. Back at the Ghost, Kanan kicks in Rex's door going, I don't like this at all. And Rex is like, no shit, Sherlock, but we can have a business relationship and we can be professional. I can be professional, Kanan whines. And I know what side I'm on, clone snake. Bringing that back from when we did the Lost Commanders. The clone snakes. And Rex flat out says that he would never be on the Imperial side or wear their junk armor. Which is exactly what they have to do, because Zeb brings in two unconscious stormtroopers, and my god, I love Zeb. I named a cat after him. And then in one of the best scenes, Rex has to squeeze into stormtrooper armor, and then he bitches about how bad it is compared to clone armor. And then he shakes his little butt a little bit, trying to pull the armor up. And Grunkle Rex, girl, you look fine. And Hera will wait for them. Oh my god, I just realized, where did Hera go in this episode? Because she was like, because I'm about to read, Hera will wait for them to call so she can fly in with Phoenix Squadron to get them all out. Yeah, that never happened at the end of the episode, and I didn't realize it until just now. Never mind. Why even put that scene in there then? Anyway, the two of them will get in there with the Imperial with an Imperial shuttle that Sabine has stolen. And Kanan's like, man, the Empire is real bad because we keep stealing these things. And Rex is like, it's the shuttle we used last time, dumbass. What do you think of Act 1? Yeah, I just realized the whole thing with Hera with Phoenix Squadron never came back at the end of the episode.
It might have been another one of those rewrite things where they had, you know, they had different things happening in it and those got cut out or something, you know?
Yeah, but it also could have been a thing of like, since they destroyed the ship, they could have called ahead to Hera and been like, hey, you don't need to come. We got everybody. Right. So I think it was supposed to be a Calvary thing, but I didn't mean to like jump in the middle of it. I was just like, wait, fuck, they didn't do that. So what do you think about Act 1, Chris?
I liked it. Nice force music. When he's just about to sense the gravity well. Do-do-do-do-do-do. It's this force theme.
It reminds me of Legend of Zelda, like the da-na-na-na. Like, it sounds like it could be like an ocarina of a song in Zelda. Just the
da-na-na-na-na. Well, one of the great moments when I went to see Star Wars with the symphony doing the music was when they were warming up. I heard the harp player and a violin player and a harp player warming up on the force and going do-do-do, do-do-do, and then the harp player would go do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It was beautiful. I was like, there's a force theme. They're practicing the force theme. I love Rex's junk armor. Rex,
that's actually a thing, because later in, I think it's the episode The Last Battle, which I think is a season 3 episode. I mean, Rex takes a shot to the chest and he gets up just fine. And so it really is junk armor, which I find interesting, because that's the difference between, like, the Republic and the Empire, is the Empire is like,
Empire doesn't care about their stormtroopers as much as they cared about their clones.
The Republic cared because, like, you know, we saw people like Padme trying to treat them as actual people, and the Empire is just like, give them the cheapest water bottle armor out there.
Yeah,
and send them.
Give them some press board armor.
Yeah.
My only other real note is, I just don't think there's the science of a gravity well works. I sort of see what it would do, but it seems like, since hyperspace is sort of outside time and space, it seems like if they just turned on the gravity well, they could pull out any shit. Like, they could just pull out, every time they turned it on, they would just be pulling out random ships that were in hyperspace. You know what I mean? I don't see how they could, you know, still target a ship and gravity well it from a set place. You know, they were sitting in one place doing it. So they were all doing it from that one place and pulling everybody out from there. What would keep them from just pulling random freighters? I mean, there's got to be so many ships in hyperspace at any given time in the galaxy.
Yeah.
And they're just pulling them out of random space from that point. It doesn't work out, but you know, I mean, Star Wars, you don't have to really worry too much about the science.
My understanding of this is, because they have something similar to it in Thrawn Alliances,
right?
Is that it's, and actually they were talking about this in the Hondo book that I'm listening to. They had an example of this. And what it is that if something has a lot of gravity in the middle of a hyperspace lane, ships are trained to automatically stop before it hits it, because it's like, oh, fuck, a planet. And so, like, my understanding is they're probably just outside the hyperspace lane, and they're projecting it into the hyperspace lane, because they have these, like, specific lanes. And they had something very similar to it in Thrawn Alliances, where there was a gravity thing that was purposely blocking a hyperspace lane in the unknown regions, which Thrawn and Vader are like, there's nothing fucking here. Why the hell are we here and not moving? But like in the Hondo book I was listening to, they got stuck when a star supernova'd, right into the hyperspace lane. And so they were stuck there, and they were staring at this thing, because the gravity of the thing had spilled into the hyperspace lane, so they had to figure out a way around it. And it's just like a thing that their ships are trained to be like, this is gravity, so this thing has gravity, so therefore there must be an object there, so the ships are trained to, like, automatically stop. You know, it's like those motion sensors that cars have now, like, if they sense something in front of it, the car will automatically stop.
It's like putting a log in front of the train tracks, but... I don't think hyperspace lanes work like that. But then again, I don't know how things work in the Star Wars universe. They get the force and all that.
I don't think they're in a different plane of existence. I think they're just like almost like just going so fast.
Well, I should say I don't know how their technology is supposed to work, because there's no attention paid really to the consistency of technology. It's a fantasy story, so I still was just like, I don't know about the gravity well.
Yeah,
but that's all I got.
I think it was the episode Gathering Forces from season one where they dropped the Phantom out of hyperspace to go like land on the base, and I like that they kept the consistency that they use the same like visual color schemes when ships are pulled out of hyperspace or dropped out of hyperspace. Because instead of, like, the blue, it's, like, a rainbow kaleidoscope, and everything kind of stretches.
Yeah, like that, like, light is getting split apart like a prism or something.
Yeah, and they did that in I think it was Gathering Forces, but whatever season one episode where Kanan and Ezra were in the Phantom, and they dropped them out of hyperspace because Grande was following them. And I'm pretty sure it was that episode. So I like that they kept that consistency of, like, the same visuals, because I love that visual, because it just, everything is just stretched and awesome, and you actually see like the light on them to kind of get stretched out too a little bit. So I'm always looking for like coded stories in Star Wars, because I feel like them having coded stories, like how Twi'leks are kind of like a representation of like human trafficking and stuff like that, and like alien, like, speciesisms against aliens, or, like, a take on, like, racism and stuff. I like to like look for coded stories in Star Wars to use as social commentary in a galaxy far, far away for our real world. And so when Kanan was just like, clone troopers and stormtroopers are the exact same thing, it kind of reminded me of that kind of like racism, or in this case, kind of speciesism, because clones are a species. And it reminded me like when people say that Asians are all the same. And I'm like, no, there's a very difference, big difference between Chinese people, Japanese people, Indian people, Pakistani people.
I guess it would
people.
Be easier to be like, oh, all the clones are all the same because they're clones. But as we know from Clone Wars, they're not all the same.
Yeah. And the fact that he's comparing them to like clone troopers or like stormtroopers, and he's trying to bundle them all in, like, it reminded me of like when people are like, Asians are all the same. And I'm like, no, there's a big difference between Chinese people and Pakistani people. Those are two very different kinds of Asians.
It's just like general, I mean, it doesn't really fit as much as speciesism and racism, but just it just fits general bigotry, you know, or it would be like someone saying like all them post office workers are lazy, you know, or something like that.
That's a much better like general bigotry. Thank you. That's a much better like word from what I'm looking for.
Coincidentally enough, that was a famous Imperial officer.
Yeah.
General bigotry.
But hey, in Resistance, we now have a tyranny.
Yeah, I know. Agent, yeah. I think tyranny. Vader. I think he went to work for Vader and got choked out at some point.
Yeah, probably. That sounds about right. But but it's also like I was thinking about that scene when he was like, "Stormtroopers and clone troopers are all the same," and blah blah blah. I actually like that reflex from Kanan and him going to there, because it's a pain reflex. It's really easy for Kanan to compare Rex to a stormtrooper, because stormtroopers are evil in his mind, and so are clones. Clones are also just as evil as stormtroopers to Kanan.
Yeah,
and
a little bit of PTSD, something that looks as much like a clone trooper as a stormtrooper has got to be maddening for Kanan.
Yeah, and the fact that like Rex still kind of wears his clone armor, like it just has to be like every time he's around Rex, it's just such a painful thing, because I'm sure when he looks at Rex, like even though Rex is like the nicest person and like being like totally professional about it, like Rex was even like, we can be professional about this, and Kanan was just like, no, I don't like it. He's like,
well, you know, I mean, Kanan's always going to be nervous that there's some part of Rex that is programmed to murder him.
Yeah, and it's a very valid thing for him to be doing. I mean, and like, because like we as the audience who's gone through Clone Wars and all this, like, understand this. And I guess what I'm getting at is it's very good storytelling for how they're writing Kanan, because he's just having these very reflex pain responses.
Right. And you know, the way you're the way that we're talking about it, though, is in the story, all this is communicated very breezily and with a sense of humor. You know, it's through, you know, just quick back and forth dialogue. You know, it's not heavy handed at all. It's a perfect show, not tell. It's happening within the story.
Yeah. My next note is Titus is such an Imperial, and I really like him too. And like, what I liked him compared to some of the other Imperials is he's clearly informed. He knows who Sato and Ezra is. Like, and I think that's like the fun thing that really about him, because like usually like when we meet a brand new Imperial, they can get away with stuff like oh, I'm Jabba the Hutt and stuff, but like what makes Titus so scary is he knows exactly who they are and they can't pull that on him. And I like that. And he actually made a plan to capture rebels, and a plan that's actually working.
Yeah, like, no, I get a sense with him that he's kind of, he's young. And he's very cocky, which I take it he's smart, but he's young and inexperienced. And I get this feeling that like since he's so young and he's like commanding the ship,
he's particularly good. He's an admiral, so he can't be that young.
Oh, he looks young. He looks like he might be like 28 years old or something like that. But
he looks
older
to me because he has like wrinkles around his eyes to me. Really?
I got the feeling of him that he might be like a legacy, or, you know, like his father is high up in the empire or something, but he's also smart and on his ball and looking to impress people. but he's, you know, what gets him is his arrogance. He's very arrogant and condescending, even to the point of, you know, he doesn't take Kallus seriously.
Yeah.
Kallus is like, oh, good work. You know, well, this is, I'm getting ahead of us, but you know, he's got that vibe from the original Star Wars of just like a young up and coming Imperial officer. And he's just kind of smug, but you know, you can't totally discount him.
Yeah. I half agree, half disagree. See, because I agree with all the stuff with him being arrogant and everything, because that's his freaking downfall in the episode. But I took him as being, like, he feels, like, older to me, like, in his 40s, as someone who's, like, been really comfortable in his position, and he hasn't really been challenged. And he's also an admiral, which tells me that he's been around a lot longer.
Well, that makes me think he just might have gone up, he might have had a little favoritism. I have other reasons for that, but they come in a little more. I got more clues during Act Two, but I'll have more in my defense in Act Two.
Yeah, but I have more of a feeling that, like, he's older, he's experienced, and maybe he hasn't really experienced troubles, and like, because he's had nothing but like cushy jobs to move him up, but he had to at least do something right for him to be an admiral.
And the rebels haven't really been around that long, so everybody's learning to deal with it, you know?
Yeah, but I think he definitely has experience, because not everybody can be like, oh, I know what to do with Commander Sato, and I know who you are, and stuff like that. To me, he looks about Commander Sato's age. They look like they're about in their 40s together. And we learn later on that Sato has, like, I think a nephew. It's not his son. I think the kid's his nephew. I don't remember. I didn't like the Iron Squadron episode. That's a bunch of youths. Well, but we're not at that episode yet. So, but I really like Titus though. He's a very like classic Imperial. That very like original trilogy Imperial. He reminds me of that. And my last note is, I think Rex's line is interesting when he says that he would never be in the Empire side or wear their junk armor. But we know that's not true. We know that Rex has served the Empire. And so I took that line more of like, he would never go back to the Empire.
Right. Yeah.
Because now he knows how bad it is.
Yeah, he's truly not a fan.
Yeah, I have a lot of Rex notes. It's funny, like, this is the Kanan episode. Really? But most of my notes are for Rex.
Oh, whoa. Wow, Hope. I never would have expected that in this episode of all episodes. Okay, whatever, man. You want to go focus in on Rex, okay. Weirdo.
Rex had a lot of stuff to do in this episode. It was great.
Jeez, it's just basically a walk-on part, but you do you, Hope.
Well, that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, I'm ready for Act 2.
All right, hold on. I got to burp.
Hey.
I think I have to burp. Do I have to burp? Burp, yeah. Okay, now I'm ready. Let's do this. Act 2.
Act 2.
I'm sorry, guys. I drink, like, fizzy water every time I do these things. So I'm an old woman, and I drink Fizz Company seltzers, water.
Some free AMSR for you guys.
It's a seltzer water with a hint of Dr. flavor.
Ooh.
It tastes like a watered-down Dr. Pepper.
I know, but... You know, just the idea of doctor flavor is just like, ooh, it makes me think of like the Lysol smell of a doctor's office.
Yeah. Oh, no. I accidentally clicked out of the document. Let me go back to it.
we have an actual, you know, PhD doctor that sits in a bath in our factory. There's 0.01% doctor in essence in every glass.
All right. Act 2.
Act 2.
The mission is underway, and Kanan continues to bitch about the mission, bitch about Rex, and bitches about the cute little picture that Sabine made of Rex and Kanan. Well, Rex likes Sabine's artwork, thank you very much. Oh, and Chopper's there too with them, but Chopper's been painted to look like an Imperial droid. And Rex wants to deactivate the interdictor, but Kanan reminds him that this is a rescue mission first and foremost. They come out of hyperspace at the last known location of Sato's ships, and there's a big old interdictor in their way. And their ship gets hailed, and Rex pulls a watch and learn. and he starts spouting off all these Imperial codes, keeping up with the other guys. I'm being all cocky about it, because him and Commander Cody wrote all of these codes. And then I cry for Cody and all my poor clone boys and what their lives could have been and what their lives became. But meanwhile, Kanan has no fucks to give like I do for all this protocol stuff. But he has to be a little bit impressed because Rex's codes get them onto the interdictor. Meanwhile, Admiral Titus gets a phone call from our residential mutton chops master, Agent Kallus. And Titus tells him that he has Sato and Ezra. And Kallus is like, yo, you need to put that kid in your best cell. No vents. Jedi love vents. No vents. And you make sure you put 20 guards on that kid and maybe a couple shock collars. And you should probably tranquilize him for good measures. And Titus is like, lol, what? He's just a kid. And Kallus is like, okay. Welp, you're going to get fucked. I'm on my way. Meanwhile, Kanan, Rex, now undercover as stormtroopers, well, I guess still undercover as stormtroopers, but now they're really doing it, leave their ship and Kanan Jedi mind tricks two guards to let them pass. But Rex is not impressed with Kanan's Jedi skills. He's seen better, you know, Rex worked with the Chosen One and shit, so whatever. And they have Chopper plug into a droid port to find the crew, where their crew is being kept. And they find out that Ezra's being transferred to a secure cell, so at least Titus heeded a little bit of Kallus' warning. And they hop on an elevator, but they have no idea what floor the detention level is on. And then another Imperial gets on with them, and he promptly calls Rex fat. And how dare you, you faceless asshole, you hurt Rex's feelings, you're on my hit list now, I'm glad you get blown up at the end of the episode. Fuck you. Fat shaming. Fuck. Anyway. At least Kanan sticks up for Rex a little bit. But, you know, not to blow their mission. But it's the start! Kanan stuck up for Rex. You don't call Rex that. That shit. Fuck. Anyway. It hurt my feelings. Meanwhile, Ezra is doing what he does best. Being a snarky-ass 15-year-old. And as they're leading him to his jail cell, he gets an idea. His staple gun lightsaber is hanging on the hip of a trooper. And using the Force, he turns it on, making the trooper freak out because now there's a lit sword on his ass. And in the panic, the other two troopers are distracted. And Ezra gets out of his binders, beats up the stormtroopers, gets his lightsaber back, and locks them in a cell. And as he turns, two more troopers turn the corner, and he stuns them both with his staple gun. But then Chopper rolls around the corner, and a deep dread hits Ezra when he realizes that he's stunned his space dad and grunkle. And Ezra immediately lies, going, oh my god, you two are so brave, and you fought so valiantly to save me. But when Chopper rolls the video of the truth, Kanan's like, you little shit! You shot me, you little shit! And Rex just laughs it off, because he's wonderful, and he laughs his ass off, and he tells Ezra that he should have killed them, because Rex is great now. And Ezra wants to split up and take Chopper to disable the ship, while Kanan and Rex go to get Sato. And Rex is down for this plan, but Kanan is hard against it. And they start fighting like they have been all season, and they get in each other's faces. And Ezra's had enough of their fighting all season, and he snaps at them, saying he took this mission in the first place just to get away from their fighting. And something that they didn't pick up on, even with a few episodes ago. In the episode, Always Two There Are, Ezra did the exact same thing. And he takes Chopper and he leaves them. And Kanan then does the most dad thing that he's ever done, has ever done in the show. He blames Ezra's behavior on his space wife. That's the most dad thing that Kanan has ever done in the show. And I love this space family. And Ezra heads out to disable the ship while Kanan and Rex heads out to find Sato. Oh, and someone tells Titus that Ezra is gone, and Titus is like, fuck! I don't want Kallus to be right, so kill the boy when you find him, capiche? What'd you think of Act 2?
I liked it. It was a riot.
It's so funny. I had so much fun writing this.
You got your dance trooper. doing a little jig when the lightsaber goes off. That's nice. I love that Rex just loves that he got shot. He's just I got shot.
And he was just like, you should have killed us.
Yeah, he was training the kid how to shoot people like a couple weeks ago. He's just like, my training's working. I love him chucking the helmet.
We're not there yet. That's act three.
Oh, is that act three?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I split this act really weird. I wasn't quite sure where to split it, so.
Okay. Well, that's all I got for act two, then.
Oh, I'm sorry. Because I have that note, too.
I got a lot of notes for act three.
Yeah, I split it. It was so weird, because, like, when they finally had the last screen wipe, it was, like, 4 minutes before the episode ended. So I was like, I don't know where to split the episode. Well, my first note was last week we talked about the formula of season two and how it's different from season one and stuff. And this time around, we get Kanan's story going through this formula with the Rex. And I think it's the one that's addressing it the best, like really using this formula the best, like really organically making Kanan crash into his past. Because like Hondo and Ezra, while it's a great episode, is like, oh, it's just like kind of one-off. And Ezra's like, yeah, I used to be like that. And like Hera gets to like talk about her love of flying. And we know that last week with Ketsu was really terrible for Sabine. It was very boring and it didn't quite work. But I think here it works because it's organically done.
Rex, everybody's in a groove. They're all in a groove in this. Even Ezra and Sato getting captured and the rescue mission. Once the rescue mission starts going into place, like... They basically just run roughshod over this whole ship. They just basically are like, okay, we're going to bust them out. And then it's like, ah, screw it. Let's bust them out and blow up the ship. Why not? You know?
Yeah.
So everybody's just, you know, they're just in a groove. You know what I mean? They're working together as a team perfectly. And they're just dominating the situation and having fun doing it. Like, and everybody's having fun doing it, and Kanan is just being dragged along until he's going to have fun too, you know?
Yeah.
It's like someone you drag along to a party, and then after a while, they start to loosen up and have fun.
And it's so much the difference between showing, not telling. Yeah. Because, like, I would say that this episode that's done its second best, and I'm not including Zeb in this one because The Honorable Ones is his episode for this formula. But we haven't got there yet, and even though it does it so well, and I love it so much, oh my god, fucking, I can't wait for that episode. I'm just going to use the four that we've seen so far, which is, I think Ezra's is the one that does it the next best, because we get to, like, he gets to see through Hondo how he used to be. But I think this is what doesn't make the Hera episode quite as strong, and where the Sabine episode flat out failed. Because the Hera episode, like, it was a lot of her, like, telling, like, I used to love flying, I used to look up at ships, right, and blah, blah, right, blah. And it wasn't a lot of showing, and the Sabine episode just failed miserably at that, because we were told all of the stuff about her and Ketsu, and then they don't have any chemistry, except for when I ship them, but even then, it's because people write wonderful fan fiction, but it's not in the actual episode, and everything that they did is so cliche, and they relied on, like, tropes and, like, cliches to work. But here, it's showing us this episode and this tension. Like, you actually see over the course of the episode, like, Kanan flat out at the beginning of the episode is, like, walks into Rex's room and goes, I don't like this. And, like, right. Rex is like, oh, I couldn't tell. But, by like, you see Kanan throughout the episode, like, loosen up a little bit more. And, like, when they're fighting, like, he'll be like, all right, Rex, just like old times. And, like, he, like, pulls out, we're not here that this is act three, but, like, he pulls out stormtroopers, and Rex is like, oh, it's like fighting with Anakin. Like, you it shows us how Kanan is developing through this episode. And that so far, this is the best of the four.
Yeah. And we're getting to really see, like, there's a dynamic between Jedis and clones.
It really touches on those Clone Wars things.
I mean, we saw it all the time in Clone Wars, so it's that much more special when it turns up in Rebels, you know?
Yeah, like, this feels like it could have been a Clone Wars episode, almost. Like a rescue mission in Clone Wars, but instead of Sato's men, it was other clones.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, if you just replace them and, like, Ahsoka would be the Ezra character, and, like, Kanan would be where Anakin was. and Rex would still be Rex, and you put this back 20 years, this could work as a Clone Wars episode.
Sure.
It would be just work just as well. It just gives me such nostalgia. And, like, I kind of already touched on this, but, like, you know, Kanan at the beginning of the episode is trying all his tricks to make Rex mad. And because he wants Rex to snap and be the monster that's in his head. But what I love is that Rex, A, doesn't give in to that because he understands what's happening. But by being, like, just himself, he forces Kanan to evolve. Like,
he's having,
like,
too much fun for the wet blanket treatment.
Yeah, and, like, he's not going to be the monster that Kanan wants him to be. And it forces Kanan to start seeing that Rex isn't as bad as he thinks he is. And he has to start looking at Rex as an individual, not as a group of clones.
Right.
And which is what all of Clone Wars was about, was showing that the clones were individuals, not just nameless faces that they were in episode 2 and 3. And that's why it feels so much like a very nostalgic,
you know, Order 66 put Jedi clone relations back many, many years.
Yeah, very much so. So yeah, I the formula absolutely works here. This is the best of the four so far. So my next note is, I love Sabine's artwork of Rex and Kanan. That picture is actually in my wallpaper folder. So every once in a while, it'll, like, pop up on my computer's wallpaper. I love that photo.
Just the picture of that artwork, or the picture of the scene of them sitting in there?
Just the picture of the artwork. And every once in a while, it'll pop up on my wallpaper. I've always really loved that. So Rex mentioned Commander Cody, and then I cried. Because there's so much in Rex's story that I wish we knew what happened. And I really doubt we're going to get that much of it at the end of Season 7 of Clone Wars. And, like, it's just, like, Rex's time with Cody in the Imperial, like, once they made that Imperial transition, and, like, writing these codes and, like, being together. Like, I really want Rex's story in that time period, because I'm wondering if it's a story of, like, him, A, trying to survive, and, like, even though he doesn't have his chip and he understands what happens, and, B, I wonder how much of it is him trying to save his other brothers, and I wonder if he could have saved Cody or tried to talk Cody out of the Empire, and, like, maybe Cody fought with him with that. Like, there's so much of, like, that little time period of Rex's life, and I really doubt we're gonna get that at the end of Season 7 of Clone Wars, where they're just like, and here's a story about Rex and Cody, right, and the Empire. And so, like, that's a story that I really want addressed really bad. But I did look it up, because I started, like, wondering, like, if they had talked about anything in canon that had happened to Cody, like, in the current canon. And I didn't find anything in the time period that I was looking for, but I did find this interesting tidbit. So, straight from Wikipedia. While developing Star Wars Rebels, the writers considered the possibility of bringing back Commander Cody. At Dragon Con 2018, and I didn't go to this panel, but Brian Weber went to this panel, and Brian, you didn't tell me about this. How dare you? Because this was the panel that you were tweeting me about Wolf and stuff. How dare you not tell me about this, Brian? I blame you. Brian, I love you, and I missed you. Let's hang out at Dragon Con this year. At Dragon Con 2018, Henry Gilroy stated that there was an idea where Grand Admiral Thrawn realized that the Spectres were working with a formal clone, leading him to do research and bring someone in to assist with a problem, and Cody could have been that person. We could have had a Cody story in Rebels, and Rex and Cody could have been in this show together and working with Thrawn? What? I would have killed for that story.
It would have been sort of a Rex versus Cody story, it sounds like.
I know, and how freaking interesting would that have been?
Yeah.
When I read that today, I had to, like, stand up and, like, walk around my room for a little bit. Because I was just like, we could have had a Rex and Cody story. We could have had it. And they would have been with Ron. And, like, Cody would have been working with Ron. And, like, what about Cody? Can you imagine Cody's betrayal when his brother has joined the Rebels? And Rex's, like, sadness when he had to fight Cody? And, like, what if he killed Cody? And then he would have been upset? Like, I was just like, oh, my God. So we could have had a Rex and a Cody story. And we didn't. With Ron. It's actually probably good that they didn't do it. I don't think my heart could have handled
it. Right. It's barely making it through this synopsis through your notes here.
My heart would not have been able to handle that. I wonder if Jonna knows about that. I need to email that to Jonna. I don't know if she knows about that. Make a note. Email Jonna Cody note. Okay. I'm just going to save that for later. All right. My next note is, I love seeing Rex in his action in old age. And it's kind of like when you're talking about him getting shot. Clone Wars Rex was so serious and would have very little flashes of humor, and he rarely smiled. But man, old man Grunkle Rex is just having a blast. He's just having so much fun.
Oh, he's loving this whole thing from top to bottom. Well, Rex is also at the age where he's just like, screw it.
Yeah.
You know, I could go out in a blaze of glory. I'd rather not, but you know what? I'm just going to have fun.
Yeah. And I why mean, not? Like, one of the greatest things that I've been discovering in my 30s is how much about certain things I just don't give a fuck.
Right. Oh, and, Hope. Wait till the 50s.
Woo-hoo-hoo! Yeah. And I'm just like, man, when I'm that old.
I think it goes
old,
up a notch in the 70s, too.
Man, I can't wait because, like, already in my 30s, I'm just like, petty ass drama, I don't give a fuck.
Think about if you make it to your 80s or 90s.
I have far more important things to worry about. I don't give a fuck. It's one of the greatest things of all time.
I'm going to be right in people's faces.
Actually, when I used to work in the comic book store, I had a younger employee, and he was like, during the time period, he was like between 19 and 21 in the time that he worked there. But, like, he would come in, just tell me about all this drama. And I'd just be listening. And he'd get to the end of the story, and I would go, why do you care? Mm-hmm. Why do I care? And he would go, well, because it's, like, this person and my friends and stuff. And I'm like, why do you care?
Yeah, screw him.
And you would see the look on his face of, like, why do I care? But then the next shift, it would be the same thing all over again.
So. Uh-huh.
It's so great. I can't be that critical, though, because I was like that when I was 21.
Well, that's what makes it all the more fun, because that's how you know how to mess with them, because you've already been them.
Yeah.
You just hold their head in your hands and you go, you don't realize, Junior, I was you.
Yeah.
I am inside your brain right now.
I keep having moments where I'm just like, I can't believe that I used to be like that. I used to be that. Yep.
Oh, when I see little children and I just go, oh God, I was one of those.
Yeah.
So some little toddler like shrieking and I'm like, oh man, what a little bastard. And then like, I'm like, you know, I'm sure that was me many times.
I'm a little bit more lenient to kids because they're learning and they can't always help it. So,
same anyway. With 20-year-olds.
Yeah.
And 15-year-olds. All of them little shavers.
Little shavers. But my next note is, I just wouldn't love when Kallus was talking to Titus and he was just like, use all force necessary for Ezra because he will screw over all of your plans.
Well, you notice Kallus is starting to just grudgingly respect these guys. He's kind of feeling sorry for Admiral Sideburns in this one. You know, he's just sort of like, do this, and Admiral Sideburns is like, yeah. And Kallus is like, oh, dude.
I know.
Oh, you're going to learn, dude.
I laugh so hard.
It's almost like part of him's rooting for him, you know?
Yeah, like this is a good example of how, like, where I could see Kallus make the change.
Well, it's not even him making the change, but it's just a little chip towards there, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just he does respect them because they've beaten him so many times.
Yeah, and he's seeing the people on his side are kind of idiots. Even the smart ones have like fatal flaws and these guys just like scramble over these Imperials like monkeys and just like take everything they want and then you know just leave them as a husk. It's awesome.
But yeah, I just had to laugh. Have you ever noticed that there's conveniently droid ports everywhere where they need them?
Yeah. Well, maybe that's just the way it is. I don't know.
Yeah, and then I was like, that's how you stop the rebels. You have a ship with no droid ports. And then Chopper will be like, where do I plug in? So I had to laugh at that, because I was like, there's always a droid port right where you need it. I love Ezra turning on his lightsaber on the belt of the stormtrooper. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of, like, the desperado shooting bullets at someone's feet and going, dance, dance!
Yeah, because the guy's just, like, spinning around. I actually half expected him to spin and accidentally cut a hole in the floor.
It could really mess him up. You see, I don't see how it would cut a hole. It could cut a hole in the floor, because I think you'd have to apply. So it was just sort of skittering around and stuff, but it could probably, like, seriously burn into his leg or something, you know?
Yeah. But it's hilarious.
It is. It's very the animation of the action in this is very well done. The combination of action and sort of physical comedy. This isn't like a comedy episode, but there's just a lot of comedy in it, which is a very good.
It's not like really straight up like slapstick comedy either. It's just natural situation funny.
It's slapstick, but it's not the sort of setup slapstick. It's just sort of things that happen, and it's very Star Wars in that. Like, funny things are happening, but it's not comedy, and it just adds that layer of fun to it, you know, of just it's awesome.
I told you, like, half my notes were me just writing, like, I like when this happened, because that was most of this episode. I love the entire scene where Ezra shoots Kanan and Rex. And Rex just be, like, him trying to lie, and then Chopper outs him, and Kanan's just like, you little shit! You shot us, and then you fucking lied about it! And meanwhile, like, Rex is just laughing his ass off, and he's just so happy, and he's having a great time.
Wonder how old Chopper is, because Chopper's the one who truly doesn't give a shit. He trolls everybody.
We know that Chopper was a Clone Wars era droid. I don't know if he's older than that, because later in the show,
he's old. He don't give a shit.
Yeah. We know Chopper was a Clone Wars era droid, because
the only person he hasn't trolled is Lando so far.
Yeah, he sucked up to Lando.
Oh, yeah, he loved Lando. Lando, well, that's because Lando, like, was nice, was just, like, kissed up to him right from, blew smoke up his robot ass from right in the beginning. Look, Lando knows how to charm a robot. Nobody else does.
That's true. I mean, look at Solo. He can charm himself with a robot. But, yeah, I love that entire section. I watched it, like, twice, because I was just laughing too hard that I had to, like, stop and, like, stop to laugh to write my notes. I know I had a similar note in the episode Always Two There Are, but again, I don't blame Ezra for being mad at Kanan and Rex, because all they've done is fight all season, and back in Always Two There Are, they were fighting about him, like his training, what to do with him, how he should act, and they're doing it again, and I don't blame Ezra for being pissed off at them, because that's all they've done for 9 episodes.
As Ezra's had to assume the role of adult several times in this season, you know, he's really coming into his own. And in this one, he's just like, come on, guys, get it together. It was basically, come on, Kanan, get it together and fucking do the mission, dummy.
It was him kind of felt like him taking back his teenagerness almost, because he's had to be the adult so much with these two that he was just like, you two need to be the adults. I'm the teenager, so I'm going this way with Chopper. And I was like, yeah, you go, 15-year-old. You tell those adults, 15-year-old.
Yeah. And he's right.
Yeah. But I was thinking about it, like, because really so much of the arguments in this episode are from Kanan. And, like, Kanan instigating these fights and stuff like that. And it would be so easy to blame Kanan for pushing all these arguments on top of Rex. But at the same time, he has reason and PTSD. So I can't fully blame Kanan, even though he's the one that's instigating all these fights, because it's a defense mechanism for him.
Right. Well, that's why we're having this episode, because this is Kanan's little rite of passage for getting along with Rex.
Yeah. So it's so just well done. Titus, my last note is, you should have put a shock collar on Ezra like Kallus told you to.
Why don't they should just knock him out and put him into an induced coma and be done with it.
That really, yeah.
Float him in some Bacta and off you go.
That's exactly what they should have done. But that's all my notes for Act 2. Do you have anything else?
No, I'm ready to polish this puppy off. Have shiny a nice puppies. Shiny puppy.
I said the same thing. Alright, Act 3. Ezra gets the reactor, and Chopper announces that he has a plan. Ezra will be the bait to draw the Imperials away from the reactor while Chopper disables it. And Ezra says, in the most true line ever spoken in Star Wars, "It's not like people pay attention to droids anyway." Which is so freaking true, and why we've been saying on this podcast all through our run of Clone Wars that this is why R2-D2 is the greatest hero of Star Wars, because no one pays attention to him and he saves the fucking day every time. Ezra runs in there and gets the attention, deflecting all their blaster bolts with his lightsabers and being like, "Look at me, I'm a distraction!" And Chopper rolls up to the hub and plugs in, turns off the gravity, which is all part of his plan, much to Ezra's annoyance. And Ezra manages to hold his own in zero gravity while Chopper disables the reactor core, and they run out of there. They run away from the troopers and get out of there. Sorry, I burped again. Meanwhile, because Kanan shot a couple guys, Rex and Kanan are now pinned down under blaster fire. And when Kanan mentions how badly Rex is at shooting, Rex then does the other greatest part of this episode, which is take off his helmet, saying that it's shit and that he can't see. And he throws it right in the face of another trooper and shoots three guys in 2 seconds, now that he can see. And it's awesome. Kanan frees Sato, who is actually worried about Ezra. And then Sato is stunned when he finds out that Ezra was fine the entire time. Teaming up with Rex, Kanan pulls troopers out one by one, and Rex shoots them down like fish in a barrel. And Kanan finally is starting to come around to the old clone. But it's a tough fight for Kanan's group as they're trying to make it back to the ship. And Rex pulls a, "I'm so old and weak, go on without me, I'll slow them down." And Kanan's like, "Do you know how much Ahsoka would kick my ass if I left you behind?" And Rex shoves Kanan through the door and shuts it before running at the stormtroopers. And the one and only Captain Rex of the 501st Legion fights like a fucking beast. And it takes him, I had to go back and recount because I wrote the wrong number, and it takes them 2 freaking stun blasts to bring him down, because Rex is a legend! And Kanan feels like shit because Rex is now captured. They bring Rex before Titus, and Titus spouts off how Rex was once a hero to help bring peace to the galaxy. And Rex says that his loyalty was to the Republic, not the Empire. And Titus drops a very painful truth bomb, which is the clones were the ones who helped put the Empire in place. And Titus offers Rex immunity and a chance to serve the Empire again. And Rex is like, "Fuck you! You can't see it, but I'm flicking off my microphone! Fuck you!" And Titus gets a torture droid to kill him. Kanan senses Rex's pain, and he's just like, "Fuck! I guess I have to go save him now." And he tells Ezra to go get Sato and the men to the ship. And Ezra super impresses Sato by fighting his way through a series of stormtroopers. And Ezra is turning into a cute little old Jedi. Gold star for you, Ezra. Just as Titus is saying how much Rex will die forgotten and how unimportant he is, Kanan has somehow snuck back in there and shoots out the stormtroopers. But Rex and Kanan don't have time to make it all the way back to Ezra, so they tell him to go, and they hop into an escape pod and shoot off as Ezra and Sato's ship sets off too. They pick up Rex and Kanan's escape pod in the process. Titus orders for the gravity well to turn on to recapture them. Just as Sato's ship is about to jump into hyperspace, it's caught in the interdictor's hold and is being ripped back out again. And Chopper goes, "Wait for it!" Because Chopper has rigged their own weapon against them. It's not just pulling in the Rebels, it's pulling in all the Imperial ships around them too. And those Imperial ships smash into the Interdictor, freeing Sato's ship, which zips away as the Interdictor folds in on itself and explodes. And the heroes get away. And a little bit later, Agent Callus rolls up in there, and he's just all like, "Hey Titus, how you doing in your escape pod? And Titus is like, I don't want to talk about it. And Callus is like, what? You don't want to talk about it? Because I told you so, bitch! I love that scene! And this episode ends with an awkward man scene where Rex is like, well, Kanan, thanks for saving me. And Kanan's like, bro, it was nothing, you know, or something. I don't know. And Kanan finally buries his past just a little bit, and he salutes Rex out of respect, a gesture that the clone returns to him. The end. Wow, I had more notes for Act 3 than I thought.
Yeah, I do too, because half of my Act 2 notes are in Act 3 now.
Sorry, I'm sorry, with that Act's weird.
Callus is being really flip, I guess, because he's not going to get in trouble for this, especially since Admiral Sideburns is alive.
Nope.
But they just realized they didn't just sink a major piece of equipment. They also are going to have to make probably the Empire is probably going to have to make a lot of expensive changes and do a lot of training on its security codes now, because they can't if they can't use the old protocols that Rex and Cody devised, because now Rex could teach that to all the rebels now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is a little expensive adventure for the Imperials. Let's see, what are my other notes? I love zero g physics come in.
Yeah, like one guy would shoot at Ezra and he would fly back, and Ezra would deflect and fly back.
It, like way back in Clone Wars, like season 2, one of the first, I think, George Kurstick stories had some nice zero g.
That was the fight with Cad Bane.
Yeah,
hangar.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that because I just watched that like a month ago. So,
the scene of Rex chucking his helmet is hilarious, and it works perfectly with animation, because you don't have to do a million takes of it. You could have that long. It's way funnier with the stormtrooper way down the hall, and he just chucks it perfectly. It just like conk, and then like blast. It's just a great visual gag that you could do a lot easier with the animation.
I have that note too, which was, so has Rex solved the debate why stormtroopers suck because their helmets are terrible?
Their helmets will knock, and their helmets will just knock them out.
I know, but I have to say, that's one of my hands down favorite Rex moments of all time, where he's just like, I can't see! Throw! Shoot! And he just like takes out three guys, and I'm just like, oh, that's one of the best Rex things that has ever happened. I love that moment.
I love Sideburns' line of "I serve the order that you put in place."
Yeah,
that's gotta hurt.
I have so many notes. Maybe like one note about that, but
if I were Sideburns, I would have been considering going down with that ship. But since he's coming back, I guess it was a good decision for him to bail out, even though he's got demoted. At least he's still alive.
He's a classic Imperial. He's not going to go down with his ship.
Yeah. And my only other note is a visual one. I love when the Star Destroyer is crunching in on itself, how the point of it just sort of
turns up,
tips up and crunches up into itself before it explodes. It's an awesome little touch, and you hear a little crunchy noise even though you wouldn't hear anything in space. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's all I got.
Here's my little list of things from this act, because I wrote, there are just so many little things in this episode that makes it wonderful. One is Ezra riding on Chopper as they like come out of the elevator and sneak past the stormtroopers in the hallway. Like, he's just like crouched down on Chopper. That's such a nice little thing. It's so nice. And then, like,
they must have practiced too sometime. You know, I bet you they have a little code name for it.
Yeah. And just like the little back and forth dialogues with Rex and Kanan all episode is great. And like, just little things. Like, Rex is constantly pulling at his armor, like, to make sure it's like staying on, especially like the bottom parts. Like, he's constantly like pulling it up because it's like,
he's probably getting massive creep on all that armor. It's probably a little tight, and he's getting creep everywhere.
And then the last one that made me really laugh, and it was the Sato line of, like, when Ezra's just like, I got this. And he's like, you got this. And Ezra, like, runs down the hallway and just starts taking out Stormtrooper. And Sato goes, he's got this.
Yeah, Sato learned a little lesson also in this one of how fun it is to work with Jedi.
It was just how it was delivered, like, you got this? He's got this.
Working with Jedi is different than regular military. You know, he's got to learn that lesson.
I know. It was just, the delivery was so good. I laughed so hard at that line. So, about Ezra running down the hallway, like, taking out people, his abilities have really come a long way with his lightsaber. I was thinking about it, like, at this point in the show, I remember my first watch through, I used to have a problem with how fast Ezra was developing.
A lot of people were complaining about that.
But, like, as I'm rewatching it, like, you know, like, now knowing the context of the story, and, like, seeing things like him training with Rex, him training with Ezra, him training with Kanan, him going on these missions, Ezra's right where he needs to be. Like, he's in the perfect place. He's right on cue. And it doesn't bother me anymore on the second rewatch because he's where he needs to be. I think at this time, season one is about a year. And probably about halfway through season two is probably another 6 months. So about 18 months with these people, he's been probably training very solidly for 18 months. And I think there's a big time jump between season two and three. There's a time jump somewhere in the series.
Yeah, there's a decent sized time jump. Yep, and I think there's sometimes a good amount of time between some of the episodes too. So they allow time to pass in this series.
Yeah, because I think it's between season two and three, but there's somewhere a time jump. Maybe it's not because it's not that long after Kanan gets blinded. But, like, somewhere in the series, I need to ask Jonna, because Jonna knows this. I remember her talking about it. There's a 2-year time jump somewhere in the series, and I don't remember exactly where it is. Because it's a significant amount of time that jumps. So, but yeah, Ezra's right on cue where he should be at this time. I have to say, it's really nice to see Sato fight even just a little bit, because so far he's been a character that just kind of stands around and gives orders, and, like, we know that Titus knows him, because Titus is like, I never thought I would have you, Commander Sato, of all people, which makes Sato sound like he's this great leader and stuff like that, this great commander, so it's nice to see Sato fighting, so he's not just a guy that just sits there and gives order, like, he can actually get his hands dirty and get in there, so I thought that was a really good choice for them to make for Sato. He's the first one of his men to pick up a gun when they're getting him out of his jail cell. Like, he takes the gun from Kanan and like, goes out there. So I liked that for him. This is the first real episode where I thought that Rex was going to die.
Yeah.
Which is really great about Rebels. And Rebels being all new characters, unlike Clone Wars, there's a real possibility that any of them could die at any point. Which is great for drama.
Yeah, well, Rex especially.
Yeah, because he is, like, the older character that is probably not quite in the main cast.
There would be a lot of drama to be wrought out of having Rex die, so...
Yeah. I will say, one of my... I was thinking about this today when I was writing that note, which is, how crazy would it be in just, like, a random run-of-the-mill episode like this if they killed off a major player, like, Game of Thrones style? It's just, like... random episode, and then, like, suddenly, like, I don't know, like, Hera gets shot and dies instead of, like, the big build up to it. Like, how crazy would that be if it was just very sudden in the middle?
It would be
of, like,
traumatizing for some kids, though.
Yeah, it would be, because at least when they did it later in the series, like, you could tell it was building to that. So, like, it was a lot, like, they were signaling, like, this thing is coming. But that would be, if they, like, Game of Thrones this, where at any point anybody could die.
Yeah, different audience.
Very... Yeah.
And Disney.
Yeah. That's probably what The Mandalorian's gonna be. The Titus and Rex scene gave me so many feelings. Because Titus isn't wrong about the clones. The clones put the Empire in place.
Oh, yeah, that's what I was saying. It's gotta hurt.
Yeah, and we know that Rex removed his chip. So he didn't do it, but all his brothers did. And I have all the feelings. All the feelings. Because Rex had to watch his brothers do it and probably had to play along so he wouldn't die as well, and was probably trying to stay behind to try and save as many as his brothers. And then he was probably like, I can't save my brothers, but at least, like, I can save Wolf and Gregor, so I might not be able to save all my brothers from this, but I can save Wolf and Gregor! I have Rex feelings. This is the Kanan episode, and I have so many Rex feelings. My next note is, is there anything more satisfying in Star Wars than watching two ships collide in space? Because it's awesome.
Yeah, and this one's especially awesome because they're, like, colliding, but it's also magnetically pulling it, so it's just sort of dragging across it. It's just a neat collision.
Yeah. Oh, I love watching ships collide in space on Star Wars. It's so good. So good. Oh, that's, like, a sensory thing where I'm just like, yes, do it. I can't do my Palpatine voice tonight.
Do it now.
Smash your ships together, make them
push
scoot.
Them right together real good,
scrape. My next note is, I freaking love how smug Kallus is, and
eating it up.
Oh, he's so smug, and his I told you so scene. He's
like, it's you on the chopping block this time, buddy, and don't say it's all on tape. I warned you.
And he's flying up to the interdictor, and he has that little smile on his face, like, oh, I told them this is my life every day.
Yeah.
Oh, that scene is also so satisfying too.
I'm not getting the demerit this time.
Yeah, there's something just very satisfying about that entire scene. I think it's just like when watching, like, Imperials get their nose, like, rubbed in it. Oh, it's so good. So good. And my last note is, this episode came at the perfect time for Kanan. He's finally getting to bury some of his past and let Rex off the hook and, like, accepting Rex as an individual. Because Rex has had 9 episodes to help prove. This is where I had to look up how many episodes we're in. Rex has had 9 episodes to help the Rebellion and to prove himself. And it's finally reached a point where Kanan is starting to come off as petty, and it needed to be addressed. And I think if it came sooner in the season, it wouldn't have felt right and would have felt rushed. But if it came any later in the season, it would make Kanan look really, really petty and just look like a really small person and just being a big jerk about it. And so after 19 episodes of Rex proving himself, this episode is right where it needs to be for Kanan, because any sooner would have been rush, any later he would have been petty.
I agree.
So, yeah, that's all I have for this episode. Did you have anything else?
Ready to score it up?
I'm ready to score it up.
The last couple I did were hovering around 7.5. This one shoots up to a 9.0. This is how you do it, with a one and done and a transition episode and a fun episode. It's visually the space stuff, and it starts, all the visual aspects of it are perfect, from the hardware fighting to the hand-to-hand combat. There's all different kinds of exciting chasing and fighting and deceiving and escaping going on, all in 22 minutes. It tells its story perfectly, pitch perfectly, gets everything right, boom 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 at the end, and then a nice little hitch in your throat when they salute each other. 9.0, great episode
for me. Like, I remember going into this that this was a fun episode. I forgot how wonderfully fun it was.
Yeah, it was enjoyable all the way through,
because I was like, oh yeah, I like this episode, it's fun. And then I was watching it, I was like, this is so much more fun than I remembered. Like, I could probably go back and watch this episode again right now, because I just love it so much.
I could too. And talking about it, it was just like, oh yeah, I forgot about Ezra hiding on the side of, there's so many nice little touches to it.
Yeah,
it's excellent.
Yeah, and it's fun from beginning to end. There's so many little nuggets for Clone Wars fans too, like just like mentioning Cody and like talking about Order 66 and like seeing a Jedi, like we said earlier, this could be a Clone Wars episode easily. You just like replace a few people and put Sato's men and make them clones. Like, it just, it feels like old Clone Wars episodes. And there's development for Rex and for Kanan. Ezra is showing growth in his skills. Callus gets to rub Titus's nose in his own shit. And overall, like, there's so many just amazing little things that just make this episode a blast to watch. And the thing is, it feels organically Star Wars, and it feels like what a superb Rebels episode should be. So I also gave it a 9 out of 10.
Oh, excellent. We're in perfect alignment.
Yeah. The only reason I didn't score it higher is because I know I like the honorable ones slightly more. And I know that's probably going to be a 9.5, and my 10 is going to be Twilight of the Apprentice. I know this already. Oh, man. Well, as always, and let's be honest here, the 9.5 that probably will be honorable ones is fucking just straight up me shipping them.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure what episodes I know are going to be 9.5s for Hope.
I'm going to warn you now. The honorable ones is going to be so gay. I'm going to write that as the gayest meet cute of ice planets ever. Oh my god. Speaking of like gay meet cutes in fan fiction, this is a segue before we get the feedback. I was reading the previews, as I always do at work, and I was like looking, I always like to look at the new Star Wars comics that are coming, and right now they're doing the Age of series. So they did all of Age of Republic. They're currently in Age of Rebellion, which is the original trilogy timeline, and they're about to do Age of Resistance. And one of the Age of Resistance is a General Hux book. And I was like, that's cool. And then I read the summary. The summary of this General Hux book is the most fan fiction thing I've ever read, which is General Hux and Kylo Ren crash land on a far-off planet. With no hope of rescue, the two are forced to work together to survive. But can they survive each other? And I looked at that and I was like, I've read this fan fiction. I've read this fan fiction multiple times with different characters.
As the temperature plummets, they have to use their body heat to survive.
Yeah, like, I fucking have read this fan fiction. I've written this fan fiction. And I was like, I read that and I just started laughing, and then I like put it on Twitter, and then I like texted it to Megan. And every person I like, a bunch of people on Twitter on our JGuys and Jedi account was like, yeah, this is some straight up like AO3 fanfiction stuff. Awesome. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from the Two True Freaks Facebook page for our episode covering The Lost Commanders, where we had John and Marie and Ma from Geeky Bubble on the show.
All right, and it comes from Paul C. Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
Geeky Bubble now has a new follower on Podbean called Paul C. Kelly. Oh, yeah. Very fun listen.
They really are, you guys. I can't even begin to say. Especially if you're kind of like, on Resistance. They do a really good job talking about Resistance and, like, showcasing all, like, the positive points about it. Like, I can't recommend them enough.
They're very positive people.
Yeah, just in general, so.
And classy.
Very classy.
The more Star Wars enthusiasm, the merrier. For this episode, I was definitely impressed in how they set up the tension between Rex and Kanan for a great story to develop in season 2.
Hey, that actually worked out because it got resolved in this episode.
There we go.
Oh yeah, Paul C. Kelly, thanks for bringing that up.
We need to have a private phone session with the Geeky Bubble ladies and have a little session on a little workshop on the Paul C. Kelly voice, in case he writes many letters.
We'll see. They do read all their feedback, so. Or almost the only time they don't read their feedback is if they like if it's so much and they don't have time to fit in, or if people like say like same points and stuff, they'll kind of combine them. So, well, I want to do either the lion or the crunchy.
I picked the last couple ones, so you go ahead.
I want to do the lion or the crunchy. I'm good with either one.
I got the lion in my hand.
All right. Well, if you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kats because it's a big old weirdo, weird, weirdy word. So our friend Dario sends us candy from all over the world to review because Dario is wonderful and he's Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It. And this week we're doing the Lion White chocolate bar, which comes from Portugal. It has a lion on it going, lion!
Like an albino poop.
It actually, now I'm looking at the package, it looks like the very definition of an onomatopoeia, where the lion has his mouth open and he's just saying, lion!
Lion!
Oh, it does look like a white poop. Kind of a...
It's kind of like a version of, like, it's got, like, crunchy...
Oh, wow.
Rice crunches, but it's got a little Twix to it, too, because it's got the caramel.
Oh, man. That's really good. I love white chocolate. Even though it's not really chocolate. No, it kind of isn't. It's cocoa butter. Or isn't it, like, butter from cocoa?
I don't know. It's got a funky flavor to it that's really good, like an almost, like...
There's almost a coconut flavor somewhere in there.
Yes! It's got to be coconut.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not chocolate.
But there's like a fruity element to it too. It like the more you chew on it, the more flavors come out. It's like a Willy Wonka thing.
Oh, all the ingredients are in another language.
I know.
I'm trying. I recognize the word syrup.
There's almost a maltiness to it too. It's
Thing is, though, it's not, like, overly sweet, which I thought it would be sweeter.
Yeah, usually I don't like white chocolate. It always tastes kind of sickly sweet to it, but I probably only got my hands on American white chocolate.
Yeah, so I'm trying to, like, read the ingredients. I'm like, I don't know how to speak Portuguese.
Yeah, cucros. I don't know what cucros is.
Well, that's all I have for the episode. Where can people find you, Chris?
Man, there's lots of cuckoos in this. You can find me at twotruefreaks.com. That's our website. That's where you can find all of our podcasts. Just tons and tons and tons of them. Loading up all the time. You can go there. Or you can find us at iTunes, too, and download our podcast from there. Whatever the hell it is, Apple Podcasts or whatever it is. I don't know. It's in transition. But there's some app that will get you podcasts through Apple that used to be iTunes, and we are on there. And we are also on Facebook, where you can, if you go to the Two True Freaks page on Facebook, you can see all our podcasters putting up their podcasts, and then you can, if you choose to listen to that podcast, you can comment on it and have a little chit chat with the creator about the very podcast that you've listened to. Or you can go to the Two True Freaks Cantina to talk about whatever the hell you want, as long as it's nerdy. We are also on Twitter, where the Twitter page is run by Half Man, Half Machine, probably more like a tape recorder or an MP3 player machine. Gene Hendricks listens to every podcast in the universe at 1,500 times speed. When he walks around, he basically sounds like he has 1,000 birds around his head, but he's actually absorbing every podcast in the universe like V'ger. He's very much like V'ger from Star Trek The Motion Picture. So anyway, that's Gene, the podcasting machine.
It's funny because last week you caught me off guard.
I was giving you time to chew your candy bar and swallow.
Thank you, because I was like, last week you caught me off guard. And like, so I put the last piece in my mouth and you started talking about Gene. And I was like, chew faster!
Yeah, no, I live and learn, Hope. I live and
but
learn.
But it's like caramelly, so I'm just like, I can only chew so fast. And I was like, and I was thinking, my mind raced. And I was like, if I have to do this, I would go... I will chew much faster next time, Gene. No, so I was just like, yeah. So, thank you. I chewed really fast this time. Gene!
I chewed all of the lion. Gene!
I ate a lion.
Lion!
He's there, Yoda.
Anyway, that's where they can find me. Where can they find you, Hope?
You can find me at JGuysandJedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I have a website called GeekyGirlExperience.com. And I also have, I write fan fiction, and that's over on Archive of Our Own. My main story is called Forces of Gravity. My name on there is Chaos Lydia. And I also have another side story called The Lucky Leku. And I also beta read Valkyrie Strike for my friend Megan. So, yeah. That's where I do my thing, and I'm almost done with this contest that's due on Friday, so I should be getting back into the writing soon. Yay! Finish up these last couple chapters I've been sitting on my ass on for like a few months, so.
I don't get it, because you could sit on your ass and write.
Yeah. Oh, but guys.
Unless you're one of those stand-up writers.
Guys, next week, we have a guest, and I'm very excited for you guys. So.
I'm very excited for us.
I have to wonder how many of our people still listen all the way to this point.
Dario's listening. Are you, Dario? You're listening, aren't you? Yeah.
Dario, you're asleep yet? Dario, are you asleep? Wake up! Listening.
Ha!
Wake up, Dario!
Dario!
He's gonna hate us now. He's gonna stop singing his candy because I yell at him when he's half asleep. But, guys, just leave me a message. If you're still listening to this point, I just want to know. I'm curious if, like, if it gets to the point where our normal listeners
are, yeah.
I know where I can find them. So I like to know who makes it to this point. But yeah, we have a guest next week. It is Sean from Roll to Fail Podcast. They're an actual play podcast with Starfinder, but they're about to start their new arc. Or actually, they're just starting their arc by the time this comes out. They're going to be into their new story arc. The first one is straight up Starfinder, which is D&D in space. Their first arc has a lot of like Star Wars influences. It's just a lot of fun and stuff like that. The second arc is going to be cyberpunk, and Sean's actually the GM for this arc. But if you want to get an idea of who Sean is and like and how absolutely just fucking funny he is, and the entire crew is hilarious, but Sean's really funny, go to Roll to Fail. And these are the three episodes I would suggest to you. Either Honey Hunt, Trashkins, or Kors's Flashback. He plays the character in the first arc named Kors. And Kors has an entire episode, which is just his flashback, and it's just him and Callie playing. So, like, you really get a lot of Kors in that episode and kind of who he is and stuff. But I cannot recommend Honey Hunt and Trashkin enough, because he is just hilarious in those, especially Trashkins, and actually in Honey Hunt. I love Honey Hunt, too. So Sean is going to be our guest next week. We're going to be talking Future of the Force. We're going to have Inquisitors back, and it's just going to be so much fun.
So do your homework.
Yeah, and
be prepared.
Those episodes, I think Honey Hunt's like an hour and a half. I think Trashkin's like an hour and a half, and the Kors flashback is only an hour.
Well, so, yeah, Gene listens to them all in like 30 seconds, so.
Yeah, Gene, if you want to binge listen to a podcast, man. Actually, Dr. Bill listens to Roll to Fail. He messaged me. He was like, thank you for just suggesting this. It's wonderful. And I was like, oh, Dr. Bill, really? And he's like, yeah, I binged listened to the whole thing in like a week and a half. And I was like, yes, I got you.
We got a lot of role-playing gamers in our midst. So I'm sure that would be right up their alley.
Yeah. And the first arc, really, with the Starfinder arc is very, very Star Wars influenced, because Callie is the GM and she's a huge Star Wars fan. Callie is somebody else I want to have on the show when we're between seasons, to have Callie and Sean both back and talk like Star Wars gaming and stuff. So that's something that I've talked to her about too, and she wants to be on the show as well. So, yeah. So next week we're going to be stealing babies with Sean.
Yes.
Steal those babies. Bye.
Bum, 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 bum.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O-T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
That is freaky.